This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's up, folks? Welcome in. It is Sharp Money. What's up, folks? Welcome in. It is Sharp Money here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher today. Amal Shah is alongside his usual spot. Dustin Sweetelson here, too. And I have to tell you, boy, oh, boy, my first time here at the D for the new setup. I don't know if you guys are going to get 100% of me. The vibes are awesome. This is like my happy place, just being amongst gambling and alcohol. Sigma Derby right over there, which is one of my other big vices. I'm in. What's up, buddy?
What's going on? Great to have you here with us. But let me ask you a question. Is it the Cubs-Giants game or that hotbed of baseball action between the White Sox and the Royals that's going to distract you today?
No. You know what's really going to distract me is the clickety-clack of that man playing video poker right there. You know? But that's the kind of stuff that gets the blood going. You know what I mean? That's what I'm here for. So, how was last night for you? Here's the thing. I've often guessed about what you do at night. How did you watch Clemson and LSU? Were you in that exact outfit sitting on your couch?
Well, actually, I did not watch Clemson LSU. I watched Florida State.
Oh,
LSU.
I got Clemson on the brain because they played today. Yeah, thank you very much. Florida State, LSU.
I'm messing with you. I actually didn't get a chance to watch the game. I watched the replay at the airport. I was out of town. I was with, we had a big family gathering in North Carolina, so I was there. But normally speaking, no, JVT, unfortunately, you nailed it a couple of weeks ago when you said, yeah, he's probably sitting around in jeans and a button-down shirt at the house watching games. That's absolutely accurate. But tell you what, Dustin and I were speaking this morning. I know we're going to get into one of the surprise teams that you had today, at least for a lot of people coming into this weekend that didn't expect to do as well as they did. But I'm just going to tell you right now, Dustin Sweetelson, I told you the Florida State Seminoles over 9.5. This team's winning the ACC. All they did was beat down on that state, that team that can't even read, LSU. Could they read the scoreboard last night, Brian Kelly?
I have to give you credit. I don't like giving you credit, but you've been high on Florida State for the last few months here. Yeah. You love Jordan Travis. He absolutely soared near the top of the board now in the Heisman odds as it stands right now. And I got to tell you, I don't know how any team in the country lines up across Florida State and can body up with those receivers, especially one-on-one. They're going to spread people out wide. They're all dangerous. They can go up and get it. They're great in yak. And on the other side, the Florida State defense, I was not anticipating how dominant they were going to look against a good SEC team in LSU.
Yeah, I was – look, the receivers were absolutely fantastic. Keon Coleman was great. 9 receptions, under 22 yards, and 3 touchdowns. You know, what I was really surprised by, it was the balance for Florida State in that you have a quarterback in Jordan Travis who wasn't particularly surprising because we expected him to be very good, and he was great. But the fact that, Amal, you can go into this game, and on the surface, 34 carries, 135 on the ground, and 4 yards per attempt isn't great. But you had 3 guys that got at least 6 carries. All of them got at least 20 yards. 2 of them averaged well over 5.5 yards per carry. Like, that was what was crazy. Their counter-run game was awesome. It's really what made the difference is what they were able to do along the offensive line, what they were able to do along the defensive line, too. But I was very pleasantly surprised by how balanced this attack was for Florida State yesterday.
JVT, I slightly disagree with you. I thought Trey Benson could have been a little bit more effective. That had one run long of 14 yards on the longest rush for him. He had the other 11 carries for 33 yards. That doesn't necessarily solidify this running game yet. Jordan Travis was effective. He averaged 5.4 yards per carry. But to me, guys, they've got to be a little bit more balanced, but you both hit upon it. Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson are absolute dudes on the perimeter. They were outstanding. The offensive line played well. This team's in great position. They've got a big game coming up against Clemson. But here's the thing, guys, now. When you look at Florida State from a betting standpoint, take a look at what their odds are to make the college football playoff. Because even if they lose the game in Death Valley, I'm telling you right now, if they win the revenge spot against them in Charlotte in the ACC championship game, they're getting in the college football playoff. You absolutely dominate the second half against an LSU team that's going to wind up probably in the top 25, maybe the top 15 at the end of the season, no more than probably 3 losses. To me, this team is the first one taking a step forward and showing what they can be and what they're capable of being against anybody in the country.
It does open the door for potentially 2 ACC teams, does it not, into the playoff? If Clemson's only loss is in an ACC championship game, and you have one loss Florida State, one loss Clemson.
Can't argue that. You know what? That's a really good point. I didn't think about that. You're absolutely right. I think when you look at Ohio State right now, the offensive line's got some questions. Michigan, all 6 people watched that game on Peacock, so nobody saw what Michigan looked like.
I pulled that up on my phone while I was on the air.
And then you have, of course, Georgia gets off to a bit of a slow start. I know Dustin's got an opinion on Alabama. We'll get into that in a little bit, but I don't think it's a bad assertion that if Clemson plays well tonight, Duke, who was a good football team last year, Riley Leonard back under center, very good quarterback. Mike Elko's got a solid squad there for the Blue Devils. It's a possibility if Clemson wins against Florida State or loses, and then they get revenge the other side in the ACC championship game. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. We saw it last year with Ohio State and Michigan.
All right, LSU, this angle as we move forward. Look, it seemed that LSU was a little bit overvalued, right? And we saw the market actually come in the last few days before the game and finally start to push back on that. I know the peak was 3, got down to about 1, 1.5, depending where you shop for your number yesterday. The schedule is still phenomenal for LSU to rack up straight-up wins. The question is, what does the betting market do from a power rating perspective as you move forward into SEC play? Big number against Grambling, but after that, on the road against Mississippi State, home versus Arkansas, and then on the road against Ole Miss, I think you start to ask questions, right, about how highly this LSU team should be ranked, and especially if, Amal, if you look at yesterday, if Jaden Daniels is going to play the way that he did, of the times that he was pressured, PFF charged him with nearly a quarter of the pressures. Like, the quarterback holding on to the ball too long, if this is the way he's going to play, I think you've got a pretty... fraudulent's a strong word, but for lack of a better term, I'll use it. Fraudulent favorite that's going to be highly rated by the market early on.
I love the term you use in terms of fraudulent. Dustin can back me up on this one. I've been saying Daniels all year is not the guy people think he is. And the other thing I would point to, you look at Williams ran the ball effectively, but it was only 4 carries for 44 yards with a long of 35, so the other 3 carries go for 9 yards. My thing is they needed Emery in the backfield. I think he's their best running back. Noah Cain wasn't good at Penn State. I don't know why people thought he was going to be good at LSU. Daniels is an effective quarterback against when you're playing Washington State and against Arizona. He is not a top-tier quarterback who's going to dominate the SEC. Now, there's enough talent on this team, but they played a top-4, top-5 team in college football. And here was the thing that impressed me most about Florida State JV team was the second-half adjustments. I know LSU gets a late garbage score with about a minute to go, but it was 31-0 in that second half. This reminded me of the old Pete Carroll days at USC. They would be in a tight ball game at the half, and then the second half adjustments, SC would dominate. And that's exactly what Florida State did. However, to answer your original question, I don't have that much of an adjustment for LSU. This is exactly what I thought was going to happen. Florida State was the much more dominant team in the game last year. I don't know what the hell these people are looking at thinking LSU is going to be a better football team this year. You've got the same stiff at quarterback. You've got a more experienced Jordan Travis. You add Keon Coleman on the perimeter. Wilson's only gotten better. This is a much, much better team. They had the most production coming back in college football this year. 94% of production was back for FSU.
So, Florida State, obviously, a small underdog to win that game outright. Part of a weekend that was kind of quiet but did have some outright upsets, including, of course, Texas State, 15-1 moneyline underdog, gets the win outright over Baylor. Colorado at 8-1 gets the win over TCU. And then you get a little bit smaller on the moneyline prices. Wyoming, very popular upset pick over Texas Tech, at least from a point spread perspective. But, of course, the focus is Colorado and what we do with Deion Sanders and the Buffs. So I was in on TCU, lay 20.5, got the best of the number, close 21. It totally mattered, right? But watching that, so here's my question for you, because I almost feel scared to ask the question given how hyped up everybody is. Is that win more about Colorado or more about TCU?
More about Colorado. No, look, it's not. I think TCU is going to have a down year, but they still put up 42 points. Colorado's defense got some questions. They lost a ton of guys from that team. Defensive side of the ball, I think they only had 3 returning starters. But we know Dykes took over a team and went to the national championship game. They put up 50 points against Michigan. Mm-hmm. So they've got to be given some credit. It basically is going to be a plug-and-play situation offensively at TCU. But I think at the end of the day, people have to realize that Deion Sanders is recruited extremely well. JVT, we had a quarterback coach on here a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about Shedeur Sanders. I asked him specifically, how good is this kid? He goes, this kid is very, very good. He showed it. Love his personality, his disposition. People forget, Travis Hunter was not the number one recruit in Georgia. He was the number one recruit in the nation a couple of years ago. He's playing both sides of the ball for this Colorado team. One other thing I want to point out that gets overlooked when you talk about Deion Sanders. Yeah, he was a great athlete. But Deion Sanders watched more film than anybody as a player. You think this guy's not going to figure some things out? I know Patrick, Dustin, and I, we all like Sean Lewis, the former head coach at Kent State, come in running this offense. Jimmy Horn did a tremendous job for them, goes for 117. How about Dylan Edwards, the job he did? I mean, he was outstanding for this team as well. So I don't think that this is being overblown. This is tremendous. They were 20-point dog. This goes to show you, and this is a perfect example of betting, where you should not be afraid of what the odds makers have. If you like a side, you like a game, take it. Everybody's like, I didn't hear anybody say Colorado. I didn't hear anybody say TCU, to be honest with you. So I think people were passive on this game because they didn't know what Colorado was. But coming up next week, man, that line at 3, Who the hell made that number with Nebraska plus three? Jeff Sims' dad? There's no chance that Nebraska should be catching three.
Hold on, that team is terrible. Wait,
no,
hold on. So for those who do not know, Nebraska in the offseason was actually an 8.5-point favorite on the road. Circa opened that thing up at 5 yesterday, and then we saw the immediate support there at 5 all the way down to about the 3, 2.5s that are out there right now. So you're saying the adjustment from Nebraska minus 8.5 in the offseason all the way to Colorado minus 3 today is not enough.
Well, here's what I'm saying. You cannot put up a number on a team when you don't know who the hell they are. If I said to you, tell me right now how the All Blacks in New Zealand, the rugby team, how they play, if you don't know anything about it, how can you put up a number on them? And to me, how can you put up a number on Colorado when you don't know what they are? I can tell you right now, there are not more bookmakers watching more college football than me. It's just like I was talking about with the Metro Atlantic. Nobody watches more Metro Atlantic college basketball than I do. And my point is, we don't know what Colorado is. It's an unknown. When there's an injury, they don't want to put up a line. Colorado should have been the same thing. How can you put them on the look-ahead lines when you don't know what the hell they are?
All right, so you're all over Colorado, minus three.
Well, let me ask you a question. When you look at Nebraska, they scored 10 points against Minnesota. They blow the game. What a mental letdown against a rival.
Sims was terrible.
Sims is terrible, has been terrible. And you can't sit here and figure out the Matt Rhule. Yes, he'll eventually be good. But they're not that good. They're not that good. This is not 1995. Tommy Frazier's not walking through that door. LP's not in the backfield.
All right. You know, Maul got a couple of French fries in him. He's got some energy today. So we'll come back. We're not done with this by any stretch, of course. We'll get back to this game. My thoughts on it, too. We'll be on opposite sides, but that's fine because we still get along, despite the fact that he got my coffee order wrong. It's Sharp Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
NFL season is on Thursday. Updated NFL betting guide out now. Throughout the NFL preseason, VSiN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. The updated NFL guide has picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, and more. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, previews, and pontification, now is the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19 or save 50% off the monthly price. Annual subscriptions the way. Bet smarter all year long. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher here today here at Sharp Money. Amal Shaw is alongside. We are live from the D. Dustin Sweetelson here. Do I do my Patrick?
The big guy.
It's a pretty solid impression. It's not the best one.
Yeah, I just don't like this new setup because the big guy looks a lot bigger despite having a bigger backdrop behind me. You can kind of see more angles. Diet started yesterday.
I'm not going to lie. There is a reason why I wore black today.
There's a reason why 90% of my wardrobe is black.
That's right. Although, I got to say, can I do shows from here more often? We got the bosses here. I look a lot more svelte than I really do. You know what I'm saying?
It's a good jawline. You got a good Luke Perry jawline, RIP.
Yeah, that's right. Not a lot of cardio, but do a lot of lifting.
I feel like I need a booster chair.
You do look low. What's going on there?
I mean, it doesn't help that you're sitting like this.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sitting up, but still, I still look like I'm...
You need a chiropractor?
I do look a lot taller than you for whatever reason.
I don't know what
you're like. There's a great photo. I did a fight for DraftKings, and Sean Porter, who's about 5'9", 5'8", him and I are sitting next to each other. I'll show it. I will send it downstairs and have them put it up. Sean looks like he's 6'8 next to me.
What's with your posture?
My posture's fine when I'm walking around.
Your chest should be out. You were right about Utah last week. You were right about Florida State last night. Like, you should be big and proud and loud. Instead, like, we're getting this meek Amal that I'm not used to.
How's no, this? I just felt bad in the last segment for two reasons. Number one, I got JVT's coffee order wrong, and I'm not the person to send to get coffee.
Speaking now, of black, he prefers
hold on.
His coffee.
See,
black
you keep
as well.
Saying that. You're not the person to send to get coffee, but I didn't send you. You offered to get me coffee.
Well, I'm trying to protect myself on a basic error that nobody else would have made. He just said, iced coffee black.
Yeah.
And I screwed it up. But anyway, I don't know whatever they put in their cream, I guess. But it was the thing on the screen at McDonald's. But the other thing is, I was going off on him on the Florida State LSU thing. It's really not his fault. He's just sitting next to me.
Hey, man.
I just got sick and tired of everyone talking about LSU before the season started.
I'm just stuck because he said black at the end of his order, and I'm thinking of Zach and Miri make an adult film, and he goes, can I get the coffee black? And he goes, yes, you can, white, because it's a white guy.
It's a good one. It's good. Can't you see we're talking white?
That's what it is.
It's one of my favorite movies.
Zach and Miri make an adult film.
But
I can't say
the P word.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Glad that our GM, Len Mead, is looking at me right now.
Of all days for the boss. That's why I'm sweating.
Len Mead's not even paying attention. He's trying to figure out what the hell he's doing here on Labor Day.
don't do that. That was one of the – how many times do I have to hear on podcasts or radio shows today, oh, it's Labor Day, but we're working. You're not the only people. Everybody does.
Yeah, no, but like you chose to work in sports. You're going to work Labor Day. Just deal with it.
That's right. That's right. Now,
but Labor Day is the day of labor. That's when they're off.
But there's games, so you work.
Yeah, you work. All right.
Baseball apparently doesn't seem to put a full schedule on.
We're workers. All right.
All right, but in fairness, Rob Manfred misses many scheduling opportunities. Yes,
July 4th, Memorial Day, Labor Day, they always miss them.
One would hope that Brian Kelly is working today after what happened yesterday with LSU. Let's hear from Brian Kelly because I heard some comments and read some quotes, and you kind of got this vibe that, look, he was kind of upset with what happened yesterday, but also that this team thought that they were pretty, pretty big when it came to the national title picture.
They were the better football team tonight, and, we certainly are not the football team that I thought we were. This is a total failure on a coaching standpoint and a player standpoint that, we have to obviously address and we have to own. But, the buck stops with me. And I've got to get our football team to understand and recognize that, You've got to play this game for four quarters with a mentality, and we just did not. For some reason, we thought we were somebody else. We thought we were the two-time national champion Georgia Bulldogs or something. I don't know what we thought, but we were mistaken.
That could come from an offseason of them all like you're talking about, right? A lot of thoughts that this LSU team was going to be a playoff contender. But he mentioned something which was important in this game, which was play four quarters. First half, about what? They had like about 300 total yards of offense in the first half. They have a late drive that gives them a field goal. FSU comes up with a stop. After they go up 17-14, it's all FSU in the second half. The scores for them, field goal, touchdown, 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 before LSU gets a one-play 75-yard touchdown at the end to make it look a lot better than what it really was. So I think there's a lot that goes into this. It's lack of preparation. It's a second-half game plan. But there did seem to be, right, both from a betting and narrative standpoint, and it seems maybe in the locker room, an arrogance that this LSU team was, hey, classic SEC team. Of course they should take care of this.
Well, I didn't understand what changed in Baton Rouge this year coming into the season that everyone thought this team was going to be so good. Florida State was the better team last year in the Superdome, and they are a better football team than they were last year. And LSU is basically the same team they were last year. Daniels has always been a mediocre quarterback. We saw that at Arizona State during his tenure there. He makes a few plays, and everyone gets excited and enamored. But at the end of the day, he, as Dustin would say, he's just another guy, and that's exactly what he is. And, Brian Kelly talked about taking ownership. Why don't you come out and say, it's on me? Why are you saying the players this, that, and the other, the coaching staff? You're making $8.8 million a year. Just be the owner of what it is. It's your program. And by the way, nobody's better or hasn't been better in the last few years in terms of pushing players and teams under a bus than Brian Kelly.
Right. And I'll say to your point, one of the things that was surprising was, when you don't make massive overhauls on a team, I get that last year was great and they got to the SEC championship game. But as you watched that game, for example, I'll go back to a couple of them. At home against Alabama, we know what happened. You win in overtime there. But the next week on the road against Arkansas, I remember this. It was a morning game on a live bet Saturday. I took Arkansas +3.5. I had no business being able to cover that game. But the offense was atrocious, and you had one defensive lineman for you, Harold Perkins, that really won the game for you. But there were so many different games like that throughout the season where they were kind of getting by just barely on the road against Auburn. Mississippi State game, 31-16, I thought was a little bit closer than the final score indicated. And then to not make any massive overhauls this season and for everybody to go, nope, they're going to be one of the teams to get there to make up the difference of a 50-30 beatdown of Georgia, right? Because remember, Georgia absolutely annihilated them in the SEC championship game. I was kind of with you where I wasn't understanding why we got this far with LSU.
Great point you just brought up. First of all, I would never have brought up my rival or one of the teams I'm competing against saying we thought we're two-time defending champion Georgia. Just from a marketing standpoint, you don't want to put the opponent's name out there, one of the teams that you recruit against. And another thing you brought up, which I think is an excellent point in terms of the way these games played out, the Mississippi State game. The Florida State game last year, people forget, the Seminoles had the ball third and goal at the one-yard line with a seven-point lead of 24-17. If they take a knee and kick a field goal, the game is over. If they just punch it into the end zone, instead they fumble the football, LSU goes down the field, scores, and gets the extra point block. So I don't get it. I never had the affinity for this team. People were talking about LSU over Bama. Look, Bama's still Bama. They got better players. They got better athletes. They got better coaches. I don't get one win doesn't change things, and that game is in Tuscaloosa this year. I'm not suggesting or implying that LSU is out of it, but LSU is 9-3, 10-2. That's who they are. That's who we thought they were. I don't understand these people unless you live in the state of Louisiana and you're a complete buffoon. What idiot thought LSU was going to be a national champion this year?
Dustin, apparently. You were in, huh? Can't hear you.
Wrong mic. Brought in a lot of new pieces. Things went ahead of schedule in year one. Sure. I think Brian Kelly is a great program builder. His record speaks for itself. And maybe I was overtaken by the fact that it was such an odd hire and it went so well in year one that I bought into it too hard. To Amal's point, Jaden Daniels is a guy that you look at the box score and you go, huh, he had a pretty good game. But at no point when you watch him play do you go, he is a dominant quarterback. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe I fell victim to looking back at the season he had and went, oh, he had a better year throwing than I thought a year ago. He was better with his legs a year. He scored more touchdowns than he thought. And in retrospect, he's just not a guy. And on the other side last night, Jordan Travis is an absolute monster. Yep. And he should be. He's like his 15th year of college. Like, he is literally Van Wilder.
Perry Ellis. That's always my – I always go back to Perry Ellis.
The clothing brand?
No, Perry Ellis. At the Kansas. Kansas.
The old center.
Frank Harris to me has been at UTSA for like 20 years.
Who was the old South Carolina quarterback that was there for like 20 years too?
Stephen Garcia.
There you go. Yep, he was there for forever as well.
That's funny. That's a good one. I forgot about Perry Ellis.
By the way, LSU, the odds to win a national championship now down to 35-1 for the LSU Tigers. So you're going to get back in there, huh? Here's the problem. Can I interrupt you for a second? You bet that. You're saying they need to not only, you know, win the rest of the way, they need to win the SEC championship.
Yes, they have to. They absolutely have to. And then the question becomes, what is Alabama? Alabama looked awesome. I'm very happy that a couple months ago when Amal and I were on the phone late one night, which is a very odd thing to be talking about, that me and Amal have late night
phone
calls.
Twirling the cord in your fingers and kicking your feet.
And I was like, Amal, Jalen Milroe is 100-1 to win the Heisman. I have to bet this now before he's named the starter. Got a little nervous in camp, and he proved to me that was a good bet over the weekend.
Bro, so we got to talk about that when we come back, because I got to tell you, I sat back and watched that, as many snaps of Jalen Milroe as I could. I was thoroughly impressed. It was just some of the little things, not just beating up on Middle Tennessee, but some of the little things were awesome. We'll talk about that and more as we continue here on Sharp Money live from the D. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Patrick Maher out sick today. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, so the handsome level stays intact. Amal Shaw alongside Dustin Sweetelson is here. Right? No, it's true. I mean, I got my own. My mom says I'm ruggedly handsome, whatever that means. Barrett Salee is with us, college football writer at CBS Sports, does a lot of stuff in terms of watching Braves baseball. We'll talk about the Braves maybe a little bit later. Barrett, it's good to talk to you, man. So let's start with this, because I was going over your Twitter account, and you tweeted out one of the articles up at CBS Sports. It's not an overreaction. It's not a hot take. Florida State really is that good. Walk us through what you watched yesterday, and is this legitimate that Florida State is going to push for a national title, maybe a championship?
Yeah, it is. You know, I picked them to go to the playoff before the season, and I picked Jordan Travis to win the Heisman, and it was because that's a complete football team with weapons all over the place. And I think you got a really good glimpse of just how complete that team is, because in the first quarter, first half, really, they let Jordan Travis let it loose instead of running the football. In fact, I think on the broadcast, Fowler and Herbie even said, like, where's the running game? And Mike Norvell, I think, came in with a game plan to feature the wide receivers, Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman specifically, because it opened up those lanes on the ground in the second half. But I think the most interesting part, guys, is the fact that Keon Coleman was the star. Johnny Wilson's the best wide receiver on that team. And the fact that Keon emerged, now it opened up a whole different world, because you can't double both of those guys. So there are so many options now for Mike Norvell. And you saw just how good of a play caller he was in that second half. And that's something that has followed him throughout his career, both at Florida State and at Memphis. So to me, it's the full package. And another thing, and I wrote this in my story, and I don't think it's been discussed enough, there were six different players that had a half tackle for loss or more. Not one of them is named Jared Verse. And championship caliber teams have to have eight or nine guys up front to rotate, and Florida State's got that. So it's got the complete recipe for any team that can win a college football playoff. And, you know, overall talent, you know, you go look at my colleague Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio. Florida State's not in the blue chip ratio. It's just outside. However, it's extremely, extremely experienced. And I think that makes up for not a deficiency in talent, but just not where the best of the best are right now.
Barrett, love your report card on CBSSports.com. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. Couple of teams that you gave A pluses to, and just kind of give me a brief thought on why you ranked them that high. Alabama was one of them. Washington, I know they destroyed
Boise.
Boise, thank you. And, of course, you mentioned the Florida State one. But Bama and Washington, tell me your thoughts on both those two teams.
Well, what did we? What was the concern about Bama going in?
The quarterback. Yep.
What happened? Jalen Milrow happened. He counted for five touchdowns. So, you know, when you look at Alabama, there are some other questions, I guess. Like maybe not a go-to receiver yet. You know, things like that. But they're minor issues because Jalen Milrow can make up for some of that with his legs. So you're not going to have the downfield threat that Bryce Young. And Nick Saban even said they became too Bryce heavy last year and 2 years ago for that matter. So I think the goal is to not necessarily stretch the field, and you have Jalen Milrow to help negate or at least pick up that slack. So, you know, Alabama, they answered the biggest question. And then Washington, I thought Boise State was going to put up a fight. That was a 14-point spread, and that game was over by the beginning of the second quarter. Michael Penix, I think everybody saw just how good he is. And I think looking back, guys, that Boise State team is actually going to be pretty darn good and might even contend for a New Year's Six bowl game. So, it kind of got lost a little bit in the shuffle because, you know, people were paying attention to other things. The hangover from the Colorado TCU game was sort of in effect. But that Washington team is legit, and I think that win – is going to look better and better as the season goes on.
By the way, Barrett's a hard grader. Oregon, I think, dropped 10 million points in their game and only got a B plus. So we got to watch out.
All right. So my personal made up rule, it's my story. So I make up my own rule, right? If you don't play an FBS team, you can't get an A.
Okay.
That's just the rule.
All right, I like it. That makes sense then. 81-7, of course, the final score there. All right, so let me ask you this. I wanted to bring this back to Florida State really quickly because we have seen in years past that even if you get a run to a national championship, of course, last year being the one that is in most recent memory, there is still a very clear and obvious gap between, you know, the others, we'll call them, and then, of course, the team that in these last few years has been the pinnacle, which is Georgia. What is that gap like between Florida State and Georgia? Should they make this run, how much can they make up that gap if it's still there for the Bulldogs and everybody else that they're taking on?
Well, I wouldn't say it's significant. It's there. Is it the size of the Grand Canyon? No. Is it the size of the Chattahoochee River? Maybe. You know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, Georgia still lacks a little bit of experience, which is something that Florida State boasts. But I think we all know just how high the ceiling is for Georgia, especially if Carson Beck develops into a superstar. So it's there, but I think Florida State is good enough to me anyway, where they put together 60 minutes, they can beat anybody, right? They can at least get to that point. And so that's one of those things that I think, you know, people kind of forget. Yeah, I mean, yeah, Georgia's a better team than Florida State. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But could Florida State be a better team on any given day? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can put it together and have 60 good minutes and win a national championship.
By the way, if you're wondering where the Chattahoochee River is, that is in Georgia and it runs from north to south there.
Okay, thank you, because I was wondering.
I like the analogy there. Barrett, I want to go to my team, the Ohio State Buckeyes. You gave them a C+. I got no problem with that grade, but tell me why you came out with that letter on them.
Well, because, I mean, you needed to see something from Kyle McCord, right? Like, I think there are two ways to look at it. And Tom Luganville and I discussed this on SiriusXM Channel 84 yesterday. The defense playing well is probably more important than Kyle McCord not playing well. So I think that, but still, you need to have a quarterback who can light up Indiana, and Kyle's not that. So I think Ryan Day kind of scrambled a little bit. You know, he wanted Kyle to come out. He tried to give him a lot of a lot of the playbook to make him comfortable, and it didn't happen. And so they went into to halftime and kind of settled down, made some adjustments, and simplified things. And Kyle played great in the – or great. He played okay in the third quarter. You can't live like that. You know, it's okay to do it, you know, in a few games per year, but you can't live like that. And so that to happen in the first game – I mean, his second start, but the first game as the real starter, it's a little concerning.
I get your point on McCord. I'll tell you what, though. For me, the big concern, if you're Ohio State and Ryan Day, was the offensive line. I thought Indiana looked like Penn State's defensive front against them. I don't know how good or bad the Hoosiers are going to be defensively this year, but – to me, that's the bigger concern when I look at Ohio State right now.
It's a concern. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think it's with all those weapons, though, I think you can game plan around it most of the time. You have to be able to do it against the big boys, and you're not going to be able to do that, but you have 11 more or 10 more games before you play Michigan. So I think for Ohio State, yeah. But there, we've seen great coaches. I wouldn't say game plan around that for an entire season, but they know how to get past it and develop ways to sort of negate that. But, I hate this cliche, but it is true. You know, you improve the most from weeks one to week two, and, you know, they got Youngstown State. So that's a pretty easy transition. So we'll see what happens this weekend.
I'm surprised you guys haven't mentioned the biggest issue, which is Devin Brown wearing number 33 as a quarterback.
Oh, my God, that drove me crazy.
Oh, but it's Sammy Baugh. But it's Sammy Baugh. But look,
Bear, you're not even older than me. Stop it, please.
He's like 20, and he's paying tribute to Sammy Baugh, Barrett. That's an issue.
Come on.
It's weird. Devin Gardner wearing 98 back in the day was worse.
Yeah.
Like, that was just awful.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a good call. All right, we're burying the lead. So I'll ask you the question that I asked them all. Was that win over TCU more about Colorado or TCU?
It was still Colorado. TCU is not nearly as good as it was last year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They lost too much. But I think for Colorado, you know, it wasn't really a secret what they were doing. You know, they were letting Shedeur rip it. Travis Hunter was doing everything. And Dylan Edwards was, it was the center point on the running game. Like, that's what everybody thought going in. I don't think anybody expected it to work that well. But it did. And that's something they can build off of. You know, I said before the season, and I think, Amal, you were on our show this offseason, you might have said it too, that Colorado's 3.5 is probably too high for their win total. And now, like, to me, because of what we saw, because TCU knew what was coming and couldn't do anything about it, Colorado's a bowl team. And TCU, you know, it's I think defensively, they kind of got caught up in a whirlwind, and kind of guys – you go back, they've lost three of their last four games and played in the national championship game. All four of those, in reality, their defense really, really struggled. So I'm not going to say they didn't deserve it last year. They did, but, you know, I think defensively they've got some issues that they really didn't work out at the end of last season and really didn't address or haven't addressed to the point where they can contend this year.
Barrett, we got the last minute with you here really quickly. Can Travis Hunter keep this workload up over 120 snaps for 12 games?
No. They better have like 10 cryo beds in that place where, like, you know, like the tanning bed things where you freeze yourself for like 3 minutes. If this keeps up, he's going to have to do it for an hour at a time, which, I mean, that there's no way.
Yep.
Barrett, I got a quick question for you. My boss is going to get mad at me, but what else is new? So, like, have you already started chilling the champagne for October? What's going on? Your Braves scored about a million runs. Acuna finalized the MVP. And now you guys look like you might actually go back-to-back or whatever the hell you guys are doing, just winning.
Yeah, so I've got a pickup truck, so I've got all the champagne. Like, the ice is already, sitting there. I've got bags of ice. I'm dumping them out. I'm trying – like, every day I kind of drive to the drive-thru liquor store, and I'm like, hey, fill it up with another bottle because we're going to have a lot of fun this September and October. So it's getting to that point, yeah.
Drive-thru liquor store. I got to check out one of those. Barrett Salee, CBS Sports. Barrett, really enjoy your work. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks, y'all. See you.
Thank you.
Yeah, the workload for Hunter is going to be incredible to watch because, like, he's down to 40-1 to win the Heisman. I don't know if they're going to continue to give him that workload.
It'll be interesting. Certain situations, I think you kind of reduce it, but it'll be fun to watch. I always like it. He brings a ton of great knowledge to college football. By the way, guarantee you didn't remember anything else I've ever said. You remember I said under on 3.5 on Colorado.
Okay. All right. We'll come back. We got plenty left to get to. I think we're going to go with more college football. How about that?
This. This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
No Patrick Maher, I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. Final hour. It's been quick. It's been fun. I've gotten used to the fact that the show's 3 hours. And once I learned, you know, it can't win by quick. Amal Shah is alongside. Let's welcome in our next guest. Brian Howell is nice enough to give us some time today. Covers the Colorado Buffaloes. And Brian, welcome in. Let's just start with the non-football stuff, which is just, how was that over the weekend? Were you there? How much did you take in? What was the environment like?
Yeah, I was there, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, first off, TCU is a great – they got a great stadium and, you know, good football environment there. But, I mean, just the game itself was – wildly entertaining. I mean, if people just tuned in and didn't care about either team, they saw a really entertaining football game, especially in the second half.
Brian, when you look at the energy level surrounding this program, what was it like in Boulder Saturday night? Because, I mean, the reaction I felt like on the field was like a national championship victory, but the program has been dormant for a number of years. It just seemed like there was an infusion of energy into the overall program, the city, and even potentially the state until the Broncos get going.
Yeah, I mean, it's been that way since December, honestly. And, you know, this fan base has been starved for a winner, and they have felt all along throughout the offseason that Deion Sanders was going to deliver that. And so to actually go out there in week one and pull off a game like that, I mean, it just really added to that fuel for the fan base. And, you know, people are just excited. I mean, they're being talked about nationally on, you know, all the major shows today, and, you know, fans are loving it. They're like, the thing I keep hearing is, what world am I living in that Colorado is being talked about like this? And so it's kind of insane.
So, Brian, as we look ahead and we can also tie in what we just watched, let's talk about this offense. And, of course, that was the headliner. And we watched Shedeur Sanders do what he did. When you watched this team in camp and we saw what Sean Lewis is, you saw what Sean Lewis' offense was going to look like, is this exactly what you expected in terms of the tempo, the shots downfield, and is this what we should expect moving forward, or is this just taking advantage of a really poor TCU secondary?
Yeah, it's basically what I thought. I mean, I didn't think they were going to put up 45 in week one, but we knew they were going to be fast and they were going to throw the ball a lot. I mean, their bread and butter is Shedeur Sanders and those receivers, and so we knew that was what they're going to try to do, but I'm surprised they were able to score that much. And, you know, I think in part they took advantage of a TCU defense that wasn't good last year and probably lost its three best players on that defense, especially the Thorpe Award winner. I think there's also some of the element of surprise. You know, we got to keep in mind that, you know, TCU had no film on what this Colorado team was going to look like. I mean, they could look at Sean Lewis's stuff at Kent State, but nobody had any film on Colorado, but now they do. And so we'll see, you know, how teams adjust and then how Colorado adjusts now that they've got some film out there. So, but I think it was a perfect storm for them offensively to do what they did.
Yeah, I thought you brought a great point up right there. You said really nobody knew what to expect or what the film was on Colorado. It's going to be interesting to see. When you look at this team big picture-wise, now all of a sudden the expectations change. Do you feel like they can handle it? I know there's a lot of publicity that's been surrounding this team in the offseason and coming into the season, but how does it change overall now that it looks like they might be a team that's competitive in many, many games, whereas a 20-point dog, and now all of a sudden we were saying the line would probably be 7 if these two teams met today.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to affect the team at all. I think that it's changing the perception outside. But, I mean, this team, obviously, to handle what they handled as far as the pressure throughout this entire offseason and to go out there on Saturday and do what they did, I think is really impressive. And, you know, it tells you that they're not fazed by the attention and you know, all the hype and all the negativity towards them. So I think they'll be just fine with how they handle it.
All right, let's go. Let's look ahead now because in the betting world, it's been quite the story as they take on Nebraska. The line in the offseason was Nebraska by 8.5. Now we're looking at Colorado as a 3-point favorite. You know, we talk about the shift in expectations. Is there a worry that maybe there's like, hey, man, this is a lot emotionally and the come down now to go back home and play to play Nebraska in an old school rivalry? What is the expectation emotionally here? There's so much put in that game against TCU.
Yeah, I think in some cases, yes, but even going back to my last answer, and I think I just don't think this team will be fazed by it, and I think they'll be so energized by being at home. And some of these players, now obviously we know that the roster turned over quite a bit after the spring game, but some of these players were there for the spring game, and that was a raucous atmosphere. And so they kind of know what to expect with these fans. They know these fans are going to show up, and they're going to be looking forward to playing in front of the home crowd for the first time ever. And I think that's going to fuel these guys. I think more so you look at next week against Colorado State being that that come down. And, you know, I think that is almost the trap game more so than this week.
So one of the fascinating things that comes out of course, this game and this victory is Travis Hunter and what he was able to do. We asked Barrett Salee this earlier. You follow the program. You're there every day, so you'll have a better read on this. Do we expect this to be the workload for Travis Hunter all season? That seems like a lot.
It does seem like a lot, and I don't know if they're going to do it all season. That seems like I don't know if you can keep up that pace. I mean, obviously they needed him in a game that was 45-42, but I would imagine they're going to look for ways to get him more breathers. They're going to hope that they can build some leads, and especially at home. You know, maybe you can get a 2-touchdown lead, and you can sit him for a series or two, and maybe against Colorado State, if you blow him out, then maybe you can sit him for a little bit there. So I can't imagine he plays 140, 145 snaps every week, but they say he can, so we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to get tested for sure.
Rick George, the athletic director at Colorado, this is his fourth hire as a head coach now, as the AD in Boulder. Was this kind of like the final opportunity for him? I mean, I was actually surprised he survived the previous three. So many times that an athletic director is directly tied to the college football coach.
Yeah, actually it was just his third. He didn't hire Mike McIntyre.
Okay.
But he came in right before McIntyre started, but he didn't hire him. But, yeah, it was kind of viewed that way. I think that there were a lot of fans, honestly, that wanted to move on from Rick George last season, the way things were going. And there were a ton of fans, loyal Buff fans that said they weren't sure if Rick George should be the guy to make this next hire. And now they're praising him and saying he should be the AD of the year, obviously. But I think he was on kind of his last chance there. And if he didn't get it right, that was probably going to be the end for him. But he certainly got it right.
Brian Howell with us covers the Colorado Buffaloes. All right, Brian, so I'll ask you this. What were your expectations for this team coming into the season, and how have they changed after watching that game against TCU?
Yeah, I thought this team was going to be better than people thought, but not like a great team. And I projected them to be 6-6 and get into a bowl game. And I'm not going to move too much off of that after one game. I was impressed by that game, but I try not to make snap judgments off of one game. I want to see a little bit more of it, especially now that teams do have film. But I think that the way they played last week, that does raise the bar a little bit. And now you have to look at, wow, well, what kind of bowl game can they get to? Can they actually compete for the Pac-12 title? So it kind of puts that on alert, at least, that you kind of have to be ready to adjust those expectations.
Brian, you mentioned you expected them to go 6-6. First of all, I know it's early, but great call by you so far, because everybody else wasn't sure if they were going to even get to 3 wins. That was a season win total out here in Las Vegas. What were the two, let's go with 2 elements here you thought would make this team a potential 500 team and a bowl eligible team?
Well, first off, Shedeur Sanders. I just think we saw it on Saturday, but yeah. I think he's a really good quarterback. And I thought that coming into the season, I thought there's no way that if he's healthy for 12 games, he wins less than 4 games. And I just didn't think that was possible. And the way he played, it doesn't look like he's the guy that's only going to win 4 games. So I think that element right there, that's been the biggest thing that's hurt Colorado, especially the last 2 years, is their quarterbacking has been horrible. Now, if they had any kind of quarterbacking at all the last 2 years, they're a better football program. And then the other thing is just, frankly, the impact that Coach Prime has on the confidence and the attitude in the locker room. I think that in itself is worth 1 to 2 wins, just the way these guys are confident. And I think it might have played a role on Saturday.
Let's look at this. We focused a lot, and rightfully so, on this team offensively. Defensively, we watched TCU score 42 points, and there were a couple of red zone interceptions there as well that really made the difference. I think it's pretty safe to say, should we be concerned about this defense, this secondary? Well, what is the strength of that unit?
Yeah, I think there's definitely concerns on defense. And, 5 out of 6 drives TCU scored, and the only one they didn't was when Travis Hunter made a pretty remarkable interception there. So it kind of bailed them out. And TCU was at the 4-yard line. So, this defense has a lot of work to do. I do think the secondary is the strength of that unit. The biggest concern I had coming in was the defensive line and whether they could stop the run, and they really didn't on Saturday. I mean, TCU, I think they ran for 190 yards after halftime and finished with over 2. I don't remember what their total was, but Nebraska's going to look to run the ball at them and, run it up the middle and try to gash them with some of those big runs. And until CU proves they can stop the run, teams are going to do that. And I think that that's a big thing for Colorado going forward. They can't give up 42 points and 500 yards every week if they're going to get to a bowl game.
BuffZone.com. You can find Brian's work there. Brian Howell, Colorado beat writer. Brian, we appreciate some time today. Thank you very much, sir.
You bet. Thanks.
Thank you.
It's got to be pretty cool, too, to, like, cover a – like, from, you know, we're always sports betting. Cover a program like that, and now you get something like this to cover? Deion Sanders and, you know, the national talk of the town, things like that?
You're saying Mike McIntyre didn't move the needle?
No.
Mike McIntyre was not recognized in a grocery store in Boulder.
Steven Montez, you didn't want to watch that over and over again?
McIntyre, though, he was memorable because he had really big headphones. Right? Every time on the sideline, they had massive headphones. They covered both ears.
I will tell you, though, nobody, I don't know anybody in America that had a worse bet last year than I did in a game last year, which was start the season. I took Colorado's second half against TCU. They didn't score. But it wasn't that they didn't score. Like,
didn't cross the 50 type
stuff? Yeah. No, you were watching the game and you go, well, I can move on with my life now. This is a dead nut loser.
You know what? I would almost prefer that. There's nothing worse than like having to sit through 80% of a game, never feeling all the way in it, but never out of it, and then in the end it falls apart, and you're like, well, I just wasted a ton of time. If I'm going to lose a bet, let it happen early. I can shut it off and walk away. Although, a weird instance for me with Penn State, I laid the 20.5. They bring in the backup quarterback, and I'm like, well, this is over. I'm going to turn that one off. All of a sudden, I get the alert on my phone, ticket cashed. The backup quarterback decided he wanted to score some points.
You and me both.
I said, file that away for the next time I'm on the other end, and I want to break everything in my apartment.
That's fair.
Well, we were talking Colorado. We can update the Heisman odds because two Colorado players saw their odds skyrocket to win that thing. I'm not sure that's going to be the case, especially for one of them, but we'll discuss that when we return here on Sharp Money.